Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on adult Bible stories right after this. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something's wrong with them because they have been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions, and banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they're teaching these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. You know, that's a pretty radical change, don't you think, for our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years? Are you aware, for instance, your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? And that's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated these Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our Constitution. And there's at least one school left in America that's still teaching this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits for their observance. Every law has a penalty. You do not have to know what the penalty to a law is to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, you know, it's automatic. And it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package. That's the place to start. It doesn't cost you anything. And it may not be for you, but if it is, you can find out about it free of charge. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. And you can call now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page, and you can download that free General Law CD package right there. We're talking about adult Bible stories. Now, here's one. It's called the calendar. In some churches, they call this God's holy calendar. And then they proceed and show you, well, here's the names, dates, times, places, and this is what the calendar is all about, and they give you a calendar. Now, in Isaiah chapter 1, verse 14, there's an unusual statement made here. Listen to this statement. Here's God talking. Now, here's your creator. He's telling you something here. He says, your new moons and your appointed feasts my soul hates. They're a trouble to me, and I'm weary to bear them. Did you notice that? He says, your new moons and your appointed feasts. Now, in Leviticus chapter 23, God comes along and he says, now these are my feasts. Listen to this. He says, and the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, you speak unto the children of Israel and say unto them, concerning the feasts of the Eternal, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, even these are my feasts. So over here in Isaiah 1, verse 14, he says, your new moons, not mine, not my holy days, not my feasts. Your new moons and your appointed feasts my soul hates. So when we read Leviticus 23, he's got seven annual holy days in here. He's got things like the Passover, first and last days of unleavened bread, Feast of Weeks, the Feast of Trumpets, Day of Atonement, Feast of Tabernacles, and last great day. He's got seven there, seven annual holy days. He said, these are my feasts. But he says, I don't like your feasts. Now, our feasts are things like, but not limited to, Christmas, Easter, and New Year's, and Martin Luther King Day, and 4th of July, and so on. And we're pretty happy with our feasts. We have a good time on the 4th of July, Labor Day, Memorial Day. And we go out and cook hamburgers and water ski and do all those things that we like to do. But we're not practicing the feasts or the commanded observances of the Creator of the universe. We've got our own deal here. Some of them are religious, like Christmas and Easter. Some of them are secular, similar to Labor Day and 4th of July. And we have a calendar by which we keep these days on. We know that Martin Luther King Day falls on Martin Luther King's birthday. We practice birthdays. God doesn't, but we do. And we have our form of religion, and we like it. We're not disappointed with it at all. But I thought I would bring to your attention this thing of the calendar, whereby we mark these feasts, because a guy by the name of R.A. Eckert wrote this. I wished I had, because then I could come to you and say, look how smart I am. It's a treatise on the new moon observance and the development of the calendar, a research paper by R.A. Eckert. Now, I don't know where this guy R.A. Eckert is. I don't want to plagiarize his material. Somebody sent this to me years ago. I don't know who now. And it sat here in my pile of incoming mail for quite a few years. And then, as is my habit, I start on the back page. Then I read the conclusion. Here in part 5 it says conclusion simplicity. Page 124, it's about 9 pages. I thought I'd bring this to your attention. If we're going to talk about Bible study, I think we ought to talk about something kind of serious. Now, I've looked through the scripture, and for as far as I can tell, there is no calendar in the scripture. No calendar. There is a timekeeping system in here, and I don't deny that. There are 12 months mentioned in here. 12 months. And there are 7 days in a week. And the days of the week, they all have a name. And the name of the first day of the week is first day. And the name of the second day of the week is second day. And the name of the third day of the week is third day. And so on until you get to the seventh day. So when the Creator got through with creation, he said, this is day 1, day 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then on the seventh day, he actually had a name for that when he called it the Sabbath day. Seventh day, Sabbath. Now, we came along and we said, well, God, you made a mistake. You know, you should have had a name for all of these days of the week. And we didn't like that Sabbath day, so we renamed that one too. So we've got Sunday. That identifies the day of the week that we want to identify as a Sabbath. Sunday, the first day of the week, Sunday. Then the second day of the week is Moon Day, Monday. And then the third day of the week, that's Tuesday. And then Wednesday, and then Thursday, and then Friday, and then Saturn's Day. And then we're back to Sunday again. So we named all of the days of the week after our pagan gods, like Moon Day, Sunday, Thursday, Freya's Day, Saturn's Day. All of these are names of pagan deities. So, you know, we're right on top of it. Now, our months aren't all named after pagan deities. January is, Janus. Then there's February, March, Mars, Mars Day, Mars month. April, May, June. Then we got July and August. That's Julius Caesar and August Caesar's months. September, October, November, December. I'm not sure that I know what all of these months represent. I've chased that out. The 7 days of the week are pagan gods. I would suspect that probably most, if not all, these two emperors, Julius and Augustus Caesar, were called gods. And then they got months named after them. And we follow this calendar. It has 365 and 1/4 days. Actually, it has some hours and minutes and seconds, too. Just like the moon, you know, it has 29 days and so many minutes and seconds. Right away, I was suspicious about this process here. If God had made this calendar, if God intended that we have a calendar, if God can create the universe in 7 days, if he can make the sun, the moon, and the stars up there, if he can put the earth in orbit around the sun, if he can make that thing run around there in 365 and a quarter days, he should be able to make it run around there in 360 days even. If God can put the moon in orbit around the earth and do it in 29 days, 29 and a half days, he should be able to do it in 30 days. Which then would come out exactly even. You'd have 30 days in a month and 360 days in a year with exactly 12 months. Now, he didn't do that. I'm not quite sure why. I haven't talked to him and he hasn't talked to me, but I'm guesstimating here. I think he did that on purpose just to screw up your calendar, just so that you couldn't make that thing come out right. And because indeed it doesn't. I mean, you've got to be an astronomer to work this calendar. And I suspect he did that on purpose because there is no calendar in the Bible, in the scripture, I guess I should say, now that we found out about Bible, right? Now, he's got his days, and this guy Eckert took a look and he said, let's take a look at the Bible, the scripture, and let's come to a conclusion here as to how the calendar works. And he did. So listen to this. He says, we now know how the month is to begin, but how do we determine the first month of the year? In Exodus 12, verses 1 and 2, it gives us a hint. And the Eternal spoke unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, this month shall be unto you the beginning of months, and it shall be the first month of the year to you. That follows, or what follows, is a description of Passover and the lamb involved with it. Well, when is this first month? Because it's very important that we know. In Exodus 13, verses 3 and 4, we find the name of the month. And Moses said unto the people, Remember this day in which you came out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage, for by strength of hand the Eternal brought you out from this place. There shall no leavened bread be eaten, and this day ye came out in the month Abib, A-B-I-B. So he names the seventh day of the week Sabbath, and he names the first month of the year Abib. Okay. Now we got that much straight. Now he doesn't name the rest of the months of the year, and he doesn't name the rest of the days of the week. They're called the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth. Now, Abib 24, Abib, to be tender, green. For example, a young ear of grain, Abib, ear, green, ears of corn. In the International Standard Bible Encyclopedia, we find barley, yes, and is grown chiefly as provender for horses and asses. Oats being practically unknown, but it was, as it now is, to some extent, the food of the poor in country districts. Barley is always sown in the autumn after the early rains, and the barley harvest, which for any given locality precedes the wheat harvest. We'll see that in Exodus 9, verse 31, and begins near Jericho in April, or even in March, but in the hill country of Palestine is not concluded until the end of May or the beginning of June. So in talking with the University of Missouri Extension Center, the same information was given and more. It seems that the barley is harvested as soon as the ear begins to appear for use as cattle feed. The reason that it is not left until it is ripe is that when ripe, the barley ear has a husk which causes sores in the mouths of livestock. The ripe barley is used for breads and human consumption and beer production, but it is the part that is harvested last. The barley harvest in the United States takes exactly 50 days from the time that the first ear appears until the last ripe barley is harvested. In the United States, the earliest barley harvest begins around the 10th to 15th of April, very rarely, if ever, sooner. In checking with the Israeli embassy for information on the barley harvest in Israel, it was found that very little, if any, barley is sown anymore in that country, and they import the majority of their barley from the United States. Some who would say that the barley harvest has to be determined by the harvest in Israel, specifically Jerusalem, need to remember two very important points. Moses, who was given the command to observe the Passover and the wave sheaf observance from year to year, never set foot in or near Jerusalem or modern-day Israel. And two, God, in his inspired word, calls that area Sodom in Egypt, where Christ was crucified. God does not set any of his commanded observances by pagan evil standards. And while the purpose of this paper is not to determine the date or day of Pentecost and the way that it is counted, several things need to be brought to light concerning the barley harvest and the wave sheaf offering. First, the new year was counted from the month the first green ears of grain appeared. In researching this subject, it can be proven that the first crop and the earliest crop of the year is barley. Now, the Bible does not state specifically which crop is involved, well, at least not in the King James translation. And it may be hidden just as the term full moon has been hidden and could come to light during further research. Second, the new grain was forbidden to be eaten until after the first sheaf of grain was cut and waved before God, and this was done during the Passover season. In connection with this, we can find the following comments in the Torah on page 924. It's called the Omer period. Both Leviticus 23:15 and Deuteronomy 16, verses 9 and 10, stress the obligation of counting off 7 weeks from the formal start of the grain harvest. And the Feast of Weeks, this name is found in Exodus 34, verse 22, and Deuteronomy 16, verse 9. Exodus chapter 23, verse 16, calls the occasion the Feast of the Harvest, and in our chapter it is not given a name. In the Talmud, it is referred to as Atzeret, a word rendered solemn gathering, in Leviticus 23, verse 36, where it refers to the final day of the fall festival. This name has also been explained as closing feast. The rabbis no doubt had that explanation in mind when they spoke of Shavuot as the Atzeret of peach, P-E-S-A-C-H, thereby stressing the connection between the two festivals, one marking the beginning, the other the climax of the grain harvest. It should be noted here that the grain harvest that is begun with Passover and ended with Pentecost is the barley harvest. The wheat harvest continues until almost the 1st of July. This may alter the way some people have been taught concerning the spring harvest. The Messiah was and is the first of the first fruits of the barley harvest, while the church, as the first fruits, are also considered part of the same crop. It is evident that the two witnesses of Revelation are the end of the harvest of the first fruits. The Messiah did not represent the barley and Christians the wheat. Both represent the barley harvest. On page 932 of the Torah, we read, in accordance with chapter 2, verse 14, the Omer grain was roasted, then pounded into coarse grits before it was offered. This offering, exceptionally, was of barley, not wheat. The parallel between the wave chief and the Messiah is certainly evident, because the Messiah was beaten almost beyond recognition before he was waved or offered. Many people today state that this occurred when the Messiah ascended to the Father 3.5 days after his death. Is that what the Messiah said? Is that then the wave chief, or when the wave chief was offered in the Old Testament? Well, look at Leviticus 23, verse 11. It says, "And you shall wave the sheaf before the Eternal to be accepted for you on the morrow after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it." Well, in the Hebrew interlinear, the correct translation of this verse should read, "on the morrow of the Sabbath." This could have a tremendous impact on the way we figure Pentecost. The point here is not to go into a long study on whether or not this is a weekly Sabbath or an annual Sabbath. That is for another time. However, if we are to use the weekly Sabbath as a time for determining the count of Pentecost, then 17 out of every 40 years, there will not be a way to count from a weekly Sabbath between the holy days of unleavened bread, because the holy days fall on a weekend. This was determined by using the present Jewish calendar and then looking at every year in the 150 consecutive year period. And in almost all commentaries, the Sabbath referred to is the 15th of Abib, the first annual Sabbath of the year. In the Companion Bible, Appendix 51, the article, "The Jewish Months," we find a calendar that states the 14th day of the Passover, the 16th day the first fruits of barley harvest are presented. And this is but one of many references to this particular day. But is or was it in God's plan to cut the wave sheaf and wait 3.5 days before presenting the sheaf? I think that's ridiculous. What does wave mean? So the word wave means to quiver, vibrate up and down, or rock to and fro, used in a great variety of applications: lift up, move, offer, perfume, send, shake, shift, strike, wave. So here we see the wave sheaf being something that is quivering, lifted up, perfume, struck, and offered. This represents the Messiah. But when? When? The Messiah himself gives us the answer in John 3, verse 14, where it says, "And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up." Now, this is found in Numbers 21:9, where Moses put the serpent up on a pole or stake. The phrase "lifted up" here in Greek means to elevate, lift, or exalt, lift up. So very simply, then, the Messiah was elevated in the same manner as Moses elevated the serpent in the wilderness. He was waved, lifted up on the day of his death, at the time of his being cut off, in the midst of the week, which was on a Wednesday, not Friday. Now, the analogy is there, and the command is there, and the Messiah kept the law by being part of the law. So it's a simple task to see that the year starts with the month in which the barley starts to ear in time for Passover. It isn't complicated. You don't have to have complex calculations. Just observe the month Abib exactly as it says. Look at it. See if it is ready. If not, Passover is not that month, but the next. What man can deceive you by that method? The year is very easily determined, and not by the equinox. Let me pause here and make an observation. Many people use the equinox, March 21st, as the beginning of the new year. Other people use the crescent moon. Some use the beginning of the cycle, which is still in the dark of the moon. And then a few, not very many of us, but a few of us use the full moon. And so I'm often taken to task. You know, "Hey, Gordon, you can't follow Hallmark cards." One time my wife was in court, and this lawyer was pressing her. And he said, "When is the Passover?" And she said, "I don't know." And he said, "Why don't you know?" And she said, "Well, because my husband does the calculation." And then he said, "But don't you know how to make the calculation?" And she said, "I know how to make it, but I didn't make it. And since I didn't, I don't know when Passover is, but I can look it up." And he says, "You mean you have to look it up?" And she retorted, "Well, who figures Easter for you, Christian? Hallmark cards?" You see, most of us don't have the capacity or the ability to make these calculations. I'd be the first one to tell you that I couldn't make this calculation If it relied upon some astronomical observation. I don't have a telescope. I'm not smart enough. I guess I could learn, I guess, if I put my mind to it. But how many people know how to calculate the crescent moon or how to calculate the cycles of the moon? Now, Eckert goes on to say, I'm going to give you the answer, and then we'll proceed along, and I'll show you how we arrive at it. When you use an agricultural calendar, which is what we see in the scripture, a timekeeping system, it's agricultural. It is not astronomical. The astronomical calendar is based upon the sun and or the moon. Some people keep a lunar calendar, which is 355 days, and that's the way the Israelites always kept the calendars. It's called a lunar calendar, but it's only got 355 days in. The solar calendar has 365, and some people amalgamate the two of them. They call it a solar-lunar calendar. But what did God intend? I mean, what have we got here in the Scripture? And that's why there's all these various and sundry opinions, and I'm not here to castigate or criticize anybody. I mean, if you're practicing the Passover using the crescent moon, you're a mile ahead of the Pope. He's still practicing Easter. If you're practicing these seven annual holy days, and you have the seven annual holy days on the wrong days, wrong dates, because you are unable to calculate the new year, well, join the club. There's the new moon on the equinox. There's the new moon on the crescent moon. There's the new moon on the dark of the moon. There's the new moon on the full moon. And then there's the Hallmark moon. That's where Hallmark Cards calculates it from the Catholic Church. And then there's a rotating calendar program. There are some people out there that have a rotating calendar, and they think that the days for the holy days and the weekly Sabbath all change because it's rotating all the time. Now, you know, all of us have to make a decision here. We got to make a choice. And if you're going to go to hell because you made the wrong choice, I mean, we got six or seven choices here. You know, our chances of picking this accidentally aren't going to be very good. It's 7-1 against you. I mean, it's like picking up a pair of dice and throwing them, you know. 6 times out of 36, it's going to come up 7. 1 time out of 7, you're going to have the right date. Now, remember God in Isaiah 14, he says, I don't like your holy days. I think that's referring to Christmas, Easter, New Year's, Martin Luther King Day. Now, he has his holy days. And I think if you're practicing God's holy days, and you got them on the wrong dates, because you're unable to calculate it, I think he'll probably cut you a little slack. If he doesn't, he ought to. But wouldn't it be kind of neat if we could walk into the judgment and God asks you this question? He says, hey, Tony, hey, Sally, did you keep my holy days? And you say, yep, I did. Did you keep my Passover? I did. Feast of Weeks? Yep. Feast of Trumpets? I did. Day of Atonement, Feast of Tabernacles, and Last Great Day? Right on, boss. Now, he might come back with a second question and say, how'd you calculate the first day of the new year? And you'd say, well, I used the equinox. To which he might say, how'd you come to that conclusion? Well, I got it from Hallmark cards. You might come to the second guy and say, well, how'd you make the calculation? Well, I did it based upon the new crescent moon. Third guy. Well, I made it according to the dark of the new moon. Next guy comes up. Well, I made it based upon a rotating calendar. Next guy comes up. This is me now. Hey, boss, I made it based upon Eckhart's calculations in his treatise by the full moon. Now, I'm sure that we should also have, well, why did you think Eckhart was right and these other guys are wrong, especially Hallmark cards and the rabbis? Well, my answer is going to be because whenever I observed in the real world the majority of people subscribing to a practice, when I compared that to the Scripture, I always found that the majority was wrong. And I have never seen any example in the entirety of history where the majority was correct. So that's going to be my number one argument. And if you know of any examples where the majority was right, send me an email and let me know, would you? I'll be back with more on the subject of the calendar right after this. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools and all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, back to R. A. Eckert's treatise on the calendar. And see, what did he call this? He said, this is the New Moon Observance and the Development of the Camp Calendar, a research paper by R. A. Eckert. That's all I know about the guy. That's all I know. If you know where he's at, send me a letter. Send me his phone number. I'd like to talk to the guy. I checked out his work. I read his book years ago, and I checked it out. I couldn't find anything wrong with it. And I think his arguments are sound. And I had to pick one of these seven occasions. And I'm just dumb as a box of rocks. And so after having reviewed the arguments that everybody has made on these seven occasions, my conclusion was this guy makes the best sense and the best argument. Now, I'm asked a lot of times, well, does that mean that the people that don't follow the full moon then are incorrect? Well, I think they are. Does that mean they're all going to burn in the lake of fire because they got the holy days incorrect? I don't believe that for a minute. Not for a minute. Doesn't make any sense, number one. Remember that God himself told us in Isaiah 28, verses 9 through 13, he says, I'm going to speak to you people with stammering lips and another tongue. I'm going to talk to you in German and stutter. How come you're doing that, God? Well, I don't want everybody to understand what I'm doing or why. And so for that reason, I'm going to stammer and stutter so that you'll stumble, fall backward, be broken, ensnared, and taken. I'm going to complain about you practicing your feast days and your holy days. But he's not complaining about us not being able to pinpoint or identify the correct dates for this agricultural calendar. Now let me tell you a little story here. I got a student comes in here, and his name is Dennis. And he said to me, you know, I was better off before I ever heard of you because I was a bead-flipping Catholic, happy as a clam at high tide, and I was doing my thing, and I wasn't responsible for my actions. But he said, now I am responsible. He said, now I know about the Sabbath. Now I know about these holy days. I know about the Ten Commandments. And if I don't practice them, like the Passover and so on, I'm going to be held accountable. And I said, well, you're right. I never thought of that before until he brought that up. I hadn't thought much about that. I said, you know, you're right. And that's precisely what the Messiah had in mind in Matthew 13 when he talked about the parable of the sower. And his disciples came up and said, hey, boss, how come you're speaking to these people in parables? And he said, so they can't understand what I'm telling them. Because if they understood, they would be responsible for their actions. And I would have to heal them. And I'm not ready to do that yet. Heal them. I mean, I have to save them. I mean, I'd have to bring them up in the first resurrection. Not everybody's coming up in the first round, kids. Most people are coming up in the general resurrection, the great white throne judgment. But there's a bunch coming up. Big bunch. An innumerable multitude. 12,000 from each tribe. My guess is maybe, you know, 3 million. Could be 10, but it's going to be a bunch of people come up in that first resurrection. And I would like to be one of them. And this guy, Dennis, would probably like to be one of them. And in fact, it's called the better resurrection, which is why those of us that I call serious players in the game need to hone your game in. You need to practice as much of this law as you can get under your belt. You probably are never going to get 100%, but you need to get up around 90. There are 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. And when you come into the judgment, and the boss says, hey, did you keep my Passovers and holy days? I did, boss. Did you keep them on the new moon or the crescent moon? Kept it on the full moon, boss. Then he can say, you fool, you blind, you nitwit. It was the crescent moon. And I'll say, well, but wait a minute, boss. Remember when you told us in Isaiah 13 that you were going to stutter, speak in German, so that we'd stumble, fall backward, be broken, and snared, and taken? Well, boss, you succeeded beyond your wildest expectations with me because I'm just dumb as a box of rocks. But I really don't care when the date is. And if you want me to do it on the crescent moon, I'll be happy to oblige. Want me to do it on the rotating program? Hey, I'll sign right up. See, I'm not really opposed to God's holy days. I'm all in favor of them. I gave up on Martin Luther King Day. When I gave up on birthdays, I gave up on Martin Luther King Day. I gave up on Christmas, Easter, and New Year's. I'll let the Pope do that. Pope and Christians, you guys can have that whole ball of wax all to yourselves. I'll butt up. And I'm going to do these annual holy days, and I'm going to follow the Eckert formula for calculating them because I think it's scripturally correct. Now, I had an old buddy one time, and I said, hey, have you ever read Eckert's paper? And he said, yeah, I did. So evidently, this paper must be circulating in religious circles. And I would say particularly in the Worldwide Church of God, because in reading the document, my take is that he's an old worldwider. But I think he's an old world writer that's correct. And this friend of mine, and he said to me, he said, well, I follow Khalil, and I think Khalil is correct. And this guy Eckhart talks about that in the preceding chapter, chapter 4, and he calculates how the Babylonians and Khalil and the rabbis and the rest of them calculated the calendar. And my conclusion is that they're wrong, and my friend says, no, they're right. Now, my friend, you know, has made his decision, I made mine. I wouldn't sit there and argue with my old friend Bud and say, hey, Bud, I think you're nuts. Because it could well be that I'm the guy that's in error, and that Bud is correct. So if you know something is sin, and you do it, well, then you're guilty. If you, honest to God, believe that what you're doing is correct, there's some slack that you can expect there. God will cut you a little slack. He might punish you a time or two for not following the law, but the idea is that you are sincere and that you are truly and sincerely held. You're doing the best you can with the information that you've got, which is why I'm bringing you this information. Now, here's the way this thing works. I don't have time to read the whole article to you. It's 120 pages or more. In fact, it's more than that. Now it's 130, 137. When you plant the barley in the fall, that's a fall crop. You plant the barley, it sprouts and it grows up. And then when it gets cold, it goes dormant. These plants only grow, grain only grows when the ground temperature is at 50 degrees. So during the winter time, it lies dormant. Then in the spring of the year, the days get longer and the ground warms up. And when the ground temperature reaches 50 degrees, the barley ears begin to grow again. So when you see these barley ears begin to grow, you'll know right away that, hey, spring is on the way. Now, the next new moon is the first day of the new year. Now, Eckhart says, well, Moses didn't enter into Palestine, so he didn't know about that. But hey, wait a minute. Now, I'm an old-timey farmer here. I don't know if Eckhart is or not, but let me pass on a little information. So you got people living down in Australia. And I got a guy that's a student up in the north end of Alberta. Now, he's up there next to the Northwest Territories. He called me the other day, well, before the Passover this year, and he said, hey, how am I going to calculate this? I said, well, the way it was calculated during the time of the Messiah was right there at Jerusalem. When Moses calculated it, it was calculated at about the latitude of Cairo, which is 270 miles south of Jerusalem. So Jerusalem is about the same latitude as Houston, Texas. Houston, Texas, you know, round numbers. So you guys up in the northern part of Alberta, you wouldn't be doing this until May or June, whereas we're doing it here in April. And somebody has to set the date. So if the temple was operating, it isn't. But, you know, if the temple was operating, the high priest would go out and he'd be poking around in the fields and the day that he saw the barley ears begin to grow, when he sees the leaves starting to sprout out again, starting to grow, he would say, okay, next time the moon comes full, new moon, full moon, is the first day of the new year, 14 days thereafter is the Passover, and then we go from there. Then the wave sheaf offering gets offered in the 50 days thereafter, which, you know, from the Passover, the Sabbath during the days of unleavened bread, 50 days thereafter is called Pentecost. And that's just how long it takes this barley to mature, 50 days. So this is an agricultural calendar. We actually count all of these holy days. We don't say that, you know, the 4th of July always falls on the 4th day of July, or that Thanksgiving always falls on the 4th Thursday of November. The way these days are calculated, you watch for the ground temperature to warm up. This is what keeps the calendar from, this lunar calendar from getting out of kilter. And we calculate the Passover by counting it 14 days after the first day of the new year, which is the full moon during April. It could occur theoretically in March or in May. Now, I've been watching this for 25 years, and I've never seen it fall in March. It came on April 2nd one time and April 28th one time, which was only, you know, 3 days or 4 days from a March time or a May date. But so far, over the past 25 years, it's always fallen within April. There's a six-week period here that this thing could come up. And I would just about bet that, you know, if you pick the full moon in April, you're just about going to get it right. But, you know, it could be the full moon about March 13th, 14th, 15th. The barley's growing. And it could be, you know, the Passover falls on March 29, 30, 31, something like that. Could. Not too likely. Or it could be late in the month, you know, the year could be cold. And the ears don't start to head out, not head out now, they're starting to grow. And so the Passover might fall, you know, May 1st, 2nd, or 3rd, something on that order. Now, by doing that, when you count these days to the Feast of Tabernacles, the Feast of Trumpets falls on the first day of the seventh month. So these holy days, that is the fall festivals and the spring festivals, they fall 6 months apart. And you count those, and there's 29 and a half days in a lunar month, And it's not 30 days or 31, and we don't go by January 1st to February 1st to March 1st, April 1st, and so on. We count these days. The first day of the seventh month is about 177 or 78 days after we start counting, you know, from the first day of the new year. These days are counted. After you finish the last great day of the Feast of Tabernacles, we're still following a lunar month, 29 and a half days, but the time runs out with the next spring. We calculate next spring just like we did last spring and every spring. We calculate it from the time that the barley begins to grow, and then it's the next new moon. It's done by the ground temperature of the ground. Now, when you try to keep the calendar, you have to put a leap year in. And if you don't put that leap year in, then your season gets out of kilter. And that's what happened with the calendar. They had to, you know, they had to put in 2 weeks. And that's because they lost, you know, that leap year. You know, they didn't have a day to put in their leap year. Now, if you want to keep a calendar, then you're going to be keeping your calendar based upon Hallmark cards. If you want to keep time based upon the scripture, then we have to do it based upon the seasons of the year, when the barley begins to grow, and on the full moon. Now, if you're sitting there saying, well, I don't think it's the full moon, I think it's the crescent moon. Well, okay. Do it on the crescent moon. I don't care. You're not going to make me angry. I've got more in common with you keeping the Passover on the crescent moon than I have with Henry Kissinger, who doesn't practice it at all. You know, the guys from the dark side here, the trilateralists. But if we wanted to get this thing down to the gnat's whisker, so that when we come into the judgment, then we can say, hey, boss, I kept it on the full moon, followed Eckert's paper, thought he was correct, got off the crescent. And Eckert has a chapter in here on this crescent. This crescent's as pagan as a $3 Fed note. I mean, that thing, the history of that crescent moon traces back to the Babylonians. And it's part of the Babylonian mystery religion, and the crescent moon is what the Muslims follow. Remember, they got that on their ambulances and on their flags? You know, not to get crosswise from all you Muslims up there, but, you know, paganism's paganism. If the shoe fits, wear it. So if we want to follow the scripture on this, well, then we need the full moon rather than the crescent. So flip over here a couple of pages over here. The system that God has set up is simple. The first month of the year was the month in which the barley started to put on the ear of the grain. The barley harvest takes about 50 days to harvest from the time the ear first starts to show until the last ripe grain is harvested. This all ties in with the wave sheaf, which was and is to be used to determine the times for Passover and Pentecost. Now, the first month of the year is an important study in itself and should be studied, but for the sake of simplicity, the following things can be determined from the scripture. The months are determined by visibility observing the moon. The first day of the month is the full moon. The first day of the month is a day of worship, but unless otherwise proven, it's not a holy day in the sense of abstaining from work. And the first month of the year is that in which the ear first appears on the barley stalk, regardless of where the equinox falls. Now, is that so difficult? Well, who needs a complicated calendar when you have the scripture? All of this verbiage is ridiculous when we understand how Satan has counterfeited the way God had things established. And it's simple when we get back to the way that our Creator said to figure these holy days. But that would make us a peculiar people, wouldn't it? And that's what we're supposed to be, a peculiar people. So in the following illustration, taken from the two Babylons, we can see how the egg and the crescent are Satan's symbols, and how he literally wraps himself around those objects. In the 11th edition of the Encyclopedia, volume 13, page 178, we find the following under the article Hebrew Literature. Several indications favor the view of the connection in the age of Moses between the Yahweh cult at Sinai and the moon worship of Babylonian origin, in which the name Sinai points Sin being the Babylonian moon god. And we note, A, that in the worship of Yahweh, the sacred seasons of new moon and Sabbath are obviously lunar. Recent investigations have even been held to disclose the fact that the Sabbath coincided originally in the early pre-Exilian days with the full moon. Now that's what we see in their Hebrew literature in the 11th edition of the Encyclopedia. Now can we realize what they're saying? In pre-Babylonian exile days, there was a Sabbath associated with the full moon. In a footnote on the same page, we read, while admitting that a special significance may have been attached to the pre-exile times to the full moon Sabbath, and that the latter may have been specially intended in the combination new moon and Sabbath, in the 8th century prophets, we are not prepared to deny that the institution of the seventh-day Sabbath was an ancient pre-exilian tradition. So prior to the exile into or the captivity in 538 B.C., they were keeping this new moon as a day of assembly, but not a holy day. Can't find all the holy days are mentioned in Leviticus 23, but the new moon is not. New moon is mentioned in Scripture quite often, and there were observances on it, but it's not a Sabbath, not a holy day. A question arises, should we celebrate the new moon as a Sabbath day? Well, my conclusion is we ought not to add to the scripture, take away from it, pursuant to Deuteronomy 4:2. They were doing that prior to, but in the New Testament, I can't see any direct association with new moons and days of assembly. So my conclusion is the Messiah was not practicing new moons, but they were in the days of Moses. So that being the case, I'm going to abstain from the celebrations of the new moons unless or until somebody comes up with some better information. I wouldn't say I'd, you know, cast it in concrete. I'm just pointing out that at this moment in time, I haven't come to that conclusion yet. Same thing with this Yahweh thing. I haven't come to that conclusion yet. And so if you want to be a Yahweh guy and refer to the Creator as Yahweh, that's fine. I'm not going to throw any rocks at those people at all. I think that's good. At least those people are practicing these holy days. At least most of them do. Now there's a question as to how we practice these holy days. I met a Messianic Jew over in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and he was gutting the animal and putting the heart and the liver back in it and cooking it. Now, I think that's incorrect. I think that you should leave the pertinence thereof inside, and we don't eat that anyway, and cook it without making any blemishes on the carcass, but, you know, that's our take on it. At least those Messianics over there are practicing the Passover and practicing it with the lamb. Well, that's a couple of miles ahead of the Pope, isn't it? I mean, he isn't even practicing it at all, period. Practicing Easter, isn't he? All right, this study here is called Eckert. It's in the doctrine section of our Mosaic Law School. So for those of you that have the Mosaic Law School and those of you that will at some point in the future get it, it's a study by R.A. Eckert. I want to give him the credit for it. He's the guy that figured it out. It wasn't little Georgie Gordon. I don't think you can get this paper anywhere. You can get it from our school, but I don't know that Eckert, where he's at or anything about him. If you do, send me a letter and let me know. Meanwhile, we're out of time. And I got to remind you here that you are listening, or you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Hey, we're out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.